that, you know, I'm going to be okay, they think. And this is just one of these sort of big meta problems that is sort of haunting our world. And I wanted this title to immediately announce, no, this is about you. This is about me. This is about where we live and how we live right now and the risks that we have to think about.
From hot, hot Texas, we've been speaking with American bestselling author Jeff Goodell. His new book is The Heat Will Kill You First, Life and Death on a Scorched Planet. You can find out more at jeffgoodellwriter.com, or you can download this interview free from the Radio EcoShock site at ecoshock.org. Jeff, thank you for covering the climate beat so well for so long.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Part of Greenland was ice-free not long ago, it turns out, and could go there again, raising sea level around the world. In March 2021, our guest on Radio EcoShock from the University of Vermont, Dr. Andrew Crist, explained a long-neglected Greenland ice core revealed the land surface was exposed to the sun sometime in the last 1 million years. Now the team is back with a worrying update. Part of Greenland emerged from the ice pretty recently, just 400,000 years ago. Earth was only a few tenths of a degree warmer than today. Sea levels were way higher. That looks like it could be our new future, maybe sooner than we want it. From the University of Vermont, Andrew Crist, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks so much for having me, Alex.
Why do we care about what happened to Greenland ice a few hundred thousand years ago?
Right. So a few hundred thousand years ago seems like the distant past to you and I, but from a geologist's perspective, that's very recent. And I guess a more long-term way to think about this is how Earth's climate has generally behaved over the last 1 million years or so. So over the last 1 million years or so, Earth's climate has moved in and out of ice ages that are dictated by Earth's orbit and the geometry of the orbit around the sun. And every 100,000 years or so, we transition from being in this cold glacial period with big ice sheets covering the northern hemisphere and Antarctica with really low sea level to interglacial periods, which are slightly warmer, in some cases much warmer, with smaller ice sheets and much higher sea level. So throughout all these changes in Earth's climate over the last 1 million years or so, we want to know about times when the ice sheets that we still have left on the planet, Antarctica and Greenland, when they were actually smaller than they are today. And so one of the driving questions in the paleoclimate community is figuring out when the Greenland ice sheet was smaller than it was, because then we can identify sort of the climate conditions that allowed it to melt as we better understand what's going to happen in the future with anthropogenic climate warming.
Could you please briefly remind us why this one-of-a-kind deep drill core from Greenland was taken and how it survived from the 1960s, still intact today?
So it's a pretty miraculous story, and we have to go back a long time ago to the height of the Cold War. And so during the Cold War, the NATO allies, especially the United States, were worried about the Soviet Union firing intercontinental ballistic missiles over the Arctic Ocean. And one of the ways that the NATO allies thought of preventing that from happening was setting up all these radar stations to look for missiles coming over the Arctic. So in Greenland, which was a territory of Denmark, the U.S. government, working with the Danish government, was building these missile detection systems in northwest Greenland. And they were also doing a bunch of fundamental science experiments, one of which developed into this really big project called Camp Century, where they built what they called an Arctic research laboratory in the Greenland ice sheet, or rather in the surface of it, in the far northwest part of the island. And as part of one of the science projects at Camp Century was drilling into the ice itself to study its fundamental properties, as well as studying the climate history contained in the different layers of ice. So in the 50s, there had been some more shallow ice cores drilled in Alaska and other parts of Greenland, but there was never a deep ice core. And by deep ice core, I mean one that was drilled from the surface of an ice sheet all the way to the bottom of it where it rests on the landscape. So the Camp Century ice core was the very first one ever drilled all the way through the ice, nearly a mile thick, and then they reached the land surface at the bottom and recovered frozen soil and sediment. And so this frozen soil and sediment, which is what we studied in this project, was kind of shipped back and forth across from Greenland to the northeast United States, and then in the early 90s was actually shipped over to Denmark to the University of Copenhagen's ice core facility, where it sat really well preserved and curated, but not a whole lot was thought about it since it was brought over there. And so a few years ago, our colleagues over at the University of Copenhagen contacted us to see if we wanted to try out some analyses on this really rare sediment archive nearly 60 years after the ice core was actually collected. So it's been a pretty remarkable and serendipitous opportunity for scientists working on this project, because we've all been able to apply modern state-of-the-art techniques to a really rare sediment sample that was collected in the 1960s.
So when we talked 2 years ago, the timing of the Greenland meltback was more vague. How did you manage to narrow the date, and did the results surprise you?
Yeah, so when we previously spoke, our limiting age for this was we knew that the Greenland ice sheet must have melted significantly within the last million years. So, but that's not a really exact age. And so we used a different technique this time, which is called luminescence dating. And it's a geologic dating technique that allows us to determine the last time sediment that's buried beneath the Earth's surface was exposed to sunlight. And the new date that we got from that dating method is about 400,000 years ago. And the way that this dating method works is when you have sediment that is buried beneath the Earth's surface, there is background radiation in the soil that's really low level, but that background radiation is being released out and gathering electrons that will fill in the kind of impurities and holes inside of the crystalline atomic structure of minerals like quartz and feldspar. And over time, these electrons accumulate, and we call this a luminescent signal. And geologists can go and collect samples in the dark and then slowly dose that material with specific wavelengths of light to figure out how long and to liberate those electrons and measure them and figure out how long ago it was buried. So a useful analogy here for a more general explanation is that if you were to wear the same shirt every single day for 30 days, you would eventually accumulate a bunch of dirt and grime in between all the fibers of your shirt. And so this would be like a way for someone to look at someone who's wearing this dirty shirt and say, I know you've been wearing that for 28 days without washing it.
Scientists calling this warming around 400,000 years ago, they call it marine isotope stage 11. We need a sexier name than that, but what caused that particular warming period? Do we know?
So, like I began the interview with, Earth's climate has moved in and out of these ice age cycles over the last million years or so, and they're punctuated by these warmer interglacial periods. And they're a key feature of Earth's climate over the last million years or so. And not every interglacial is the same. In fact, they're all kind of different from one another. So currently, we're living in an interglacial period called the Holocene that began about 12,000 years ago. And it's been a relatively mild and stable climate since that time. But other interglacials, like Marine Isotope Stage 11, which was about 400,000 years ago, lasted much longer than we have experienced the interglacial today. So 400,000 years ago, Earth's climate was moving out of a really intense glacial period where there were very large ice sheets covering the northern hemisphere in Antarctica, then there was kind of a feedback system where the big ice sheets, and once they started to retreat as Earth's orbit around the sun triggered the end of the ice age, kind of shifted it into a really warm state. But what was unique about that time in Earth's climate is that the way that the Earth was orbiting around the sun was in a specific way that it that this warm period lasted for 30,000 years. And the duration of that interglacial period 400,000 years ago is what we think allowed large portions of the Greenland ice sheet to melt and raise sea level.
Well, just for listener reference, there were no Homo sapiens like us 400,000 years ago. The first Neanderthals were moving into Europe, though, and there were animals and parts of Greenland were actually green. How much warmer was it compared to today?
That's right. No Homo sapien hominids, but plenty of our ancestors from the branches of the hominids were around at that time. And globally, temperatures during MIS 11 were about 1 to 2 degrees centigrade above pre-industrial values. So that's we're in within that range right now as we've warmed the climate through burning fossil fuels. You know, it's kind of a useful analog for what the climate is capable of and what how certain elements of the climate system, like ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica, may respond to prolonged, relatively mild, warm temperatures.
Well, this is one of the scary things about your team's discovery. Some experts now predict Earth will be 1.5 degrees C hotter than pre-industrial as early as 2035. I'd still, though, presume it would take, what, thousands of years to lose enough ice for some of Greenland's surface to begin to appear again, or what?
So you're right. This is a scary implication of our work, is that not that much warmer temperatures in the past were capable of melting the Greenland ice sheet. And the really key part of our finding is that it was relatively mild warm temperatures for a very long time. And what we need to worry about as a global society is that we have emitted all of these greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And of those, carbon dioxide has a long residence time in the atmosphere, meaning it's going to stay up there, keeping the climate warm for thousands, maybe tens of thousands of years until it's geologically sequestered back into the Earth's crust. And so that long duration of warming, you know, could threaten the stability of the Greenland ice sheet in the coming centuries and the coming millennia. And I know it's really difficult for us as humans to think hundreds of years or thousands of years into the future, because we can at most maybe think a couple of years into the future in our own lives. But that's the scary thing to think about, is if, you know, mild, warm temperatures for a long time melted the ice sheet in the past, then what will it mean for rapid warming right now that could last for thousands of years into the future? And I guess the last thing I'd say about how long it would take to melt significant portions of the ice sheet is that there's ice sheet modeling, so numerical computer models of how Greenland may respond to climate change in the future in its configuration and geometry and how it may raise sea level. And, you know, under worst-case emission scenarios, we could lose a few meters of sea level equivalent from Greenland in a couple of centuries. And there's even some models that suggest under the worst-case scenarios of emissions that we could lose the entire ice sheet, or 7.3 meters or over 22 feet of sea level rise equivalent in the next 1,000 years. So there's a lot of unknowns in what may happen to the Greenland ice sheet, how it may actually respond to warming of the atmosphere as well as warming of ocean currents around the island. But it is certainly concerning that we could lose a lot of that ice in the relatively near future.
So is this deglaciation on Greenland a tipping point situation where enough warming starts a process that is irreversible? Once it starts, you can't stop it?
For our specific study, I actually don't think it is necessarily a tipping point result. And the reason I think that is because it's this long duration of warm temperatures that melted the ice sheet. And so an analogy that I think might be useful is if you're at a summer barbecue and you have a cooler full of drinks with ice in it, if you, you know, open the cooler up on a 95-degree day and you leave it open for maybe 10 minutes, probably not going to melt very much of the ice. But if you leave the cooler open for 2 hours, you're going to melt a lot of that ice in the cooler. And so it's really that not a, you know, a tipping point thing. It's really just you let ice sit out in the warmth for a long time, it's going to melt.
I presume there are a host of other impacts if and when more of Greenland surfaces to the daylight. The missing ice will reflect less solar energy back into space. Could it also change ocean currents or even the mass balance of the planet?
Yeah, absolutely. So sea level is really the most direct way that we can evaluate impacts to the climate system. But you're right, as you reflect less sunlight from the Greenland ice sheet into the atmosphere, more of that solar radiation is retained in the atmosphere, and the melting of the ice sheet itself could interrupt ocean currents, specifically Atlantic meridional overturning currents or circulation in the North Atlantic. But another aspect of a climate feedback or consequence of the melting of the Greenland ice sheet is that the ecosystems that are present in the areas of Greenland that are deglaciated could change. So right now in Greenland, most of the ice-free areas are inhabited by tundra and very short shrubbery. And what we're seeing in Arctic Canada and parts of Arctic Siberia and Russia is that we're seeing a shift from tundra ecosystems to some boreal forest ecosystems, as well as melting of permafrost. So these changes in what's going on in these ecosystems can also shift or change the carbon cycle. And we don't know exactly how that may proceed, but it could impact how much carbon is actually retained in the Arctic or emitted back into the atmosphere. So there's a host of different, you know, other cascading effects of the melting of the Greenland ice sheet that are quite complicated to figure out, but are possible in a warmer future.
Drew Christ, you also traveled to Antarctica, I believe, to study glaciers. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And is there a similar deep core that would reveal when the last time parts of Antarctica were there without an ice covering?
So Greenland and Antarctica, although they're both covered by ice sheets, are quite different places. The ice sheet in Greenland has been there, we think, for about 2.6 million years in terms of, like, there's been large ice sheets covering it. There's been times when it's been smaller, but for the most part, it's been there. Antarctica has been around for a much longer amount of time. In most places, about 13 million years, at least in East Antarctica. Drilling through the Antarctic ice sheet to recover sediment from the bottom is more challenging because the ice there is so thick. But there are some projects that are going on around Antarctica to figure out really old climate. And it's being done by American project teams, the European community, as well as the Australians and other nations. And some of those projects are attempting to recover sediment from the bottom of the Antarctic ice sheet in East Antarctica that might tell them the last time that it was deglaciated, but that's still a work in progress. The other half of Antarctica, which is West Antarctica, is another different aspect of the Antarctic ice sheet compared to Greenland, in that West Antarctica is what we call a marine ice sheet, meaning that the bottom of the ice sheet actually rests on the seafloor, in some places as much as 2 kilometers below sea level. So recovering sediments from the bottom of that ice sheet can tell you slightly different information in terms of when the last time there was just ocean water there instead of an ice sheet. And there's been some work done on that in West Antarctica that tells us about changes in where the ice sheet was over the last 10,000 years. But to my knowledge, there's no ability from recovering sediment cores from beneath that ice sheet right now that go back hundreds of thousands of years.
Our guest, Dr. Andrew Christ, is Gunn Postdoctoral Fellow and lecturer at the University of Vermont in Burlington. His latest paper with UVM Lab Director Paul Bierman and 17 other authors is titled Deglaciation of Northwestern Greenland During Marine Isotope Stage 11. That is in the journal Science, published July 20th, 2023. You can find more in links and news to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Drew, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Of course. Thanks so much for your great questions, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Nobody reports from Greenland except Denmark-based glaciologist Jason Box. You're about to hear a few minutes from his YouTube update posted on July 23rd, 2023.
Hey everybody, Jason Box here. I want to make this short video to describe the record-setting temperatures that Greenland is getting July 2023. And this is at a time when global average temperatures are off the charts, caused by the El Nino ejecting that excess heat that the oceans have been taking up. Remember that 95% of the planetary energy imbalance from too much greenhouse gases, it's accumulating in the oceans. The oceans are really the big story about climate because, again, most of the energy is being absorbed by the oceans. Now, in the El Nino, it comes out, and we're seeing that here with these shocking new records just smashed globally. And the other part of the story is that we're at an all-time high for greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere. So this global warming thing is very clear in this graphic. And we're seeing the consequences of this with extreme climate events that are just kind of daily now. But to focus on Greenland, we need to consider the North Atlantic. There have been record high temperatures. The typical pattern for sea surface temperatures has been a cold anomaly south of Greenland. This has been persistent, and here in the 100-year temperature trend, the only place on the planet that has been cooling is south of Greenland. This cold blob has to do with changing ocean circulations and probably the excess freshwater from melting Greenland and Arctic Canada flooding the North Atlantic, contributing to this disruption. But here we are today with the marine heat wave south of Greenland. That combined with the flow from the extremely warm North America, it's dragging that heat up to Greenland. It's picking up some heat from the oceans, and that's part of Greenland's melt story this year. To see melting wet snow conditions across the whole southern ice sheet is remarkable. There's even some wet snow being picked up by this satellite measurement here in what we call the dry snow area. These are the count of the melt days, and notice how there's only a narrow area of the dry snow area that has not yet had melting this year. And the southern ice sheet here, which really has high elevations, I'll talk about more, to have melting across the southern ice sheet is remarkable. Just a few weeks ago, we also had record melting conditions across North Greenland, but the story so far this year has really shifted to the south, the southern ice sheet melting. For the whole of Greenland, you can see 2023 here in the red line, and that is rivaling the 2012 extreme melting. On this date, we're ranked second for melting after 2012, and notice how the melt area has been around 1 million square kilometers for perhaps more time than in 2012. So again, we're rivaling the melting conditions at the surface in 2023, rivaling 2012. So we can bring in some of our automatic weather station data here. This place called Dai 2, that's 6,960 feet above sea level, so high on the southwestern ice sheet. I installed the original station in 1996, and we managed to keep this equipment running for that many years. 2023, round-the-clock melting several days in July. To have melting at nighttime, the sun does dip near the horizon here on the Arctic Circle, and to have melting at kind of midnight is remarkable. South Dome, higher in elevation, this is 9,490 feet. We had round-the-clock melting around the 8th of July this year. Max temperatures, 6.5 Celsius, that's extreme. And so we'll have a closer look at July 8th of this year, when that was the warmest day. This South Dome location is very memorable because I installed this station in 1997. And we've managed to keep these measurements running. And there have been problems, though. And you can see here, 20 years later, the station's just getting hammered. It's a extreme climate up there, 9,000 feet above sea level, high winds, and a lot of snow. So the challenge is to keep the equipment from being buried. We have to extend these stations every year or two. South Dome, I'm just dwelling on here because that's really where the July 2023 melt anomaly is focused. So these are so-called melting degree days. It's the sum of air temperatures above zero Celsius, and we have 2023 at record high melting degree days, higher than 2012. And you can see we've got some data gaps here. We know that 2010 was also a very warm year, so that may be up here. But as you can see, 2023 is extremely high temperature for South Dome. So Xavier Fettweis is calculating the so-called surface mass balance. That's the balance of snowfall and meltwater runoff. And for this small, or this area of South Greenland, it's not that small, this green area, the surface mass balance is record low. So the ice sheet has been in mass budget deficit throughout the year when you add these up day by day. And so, again, the story for 2023 seems to be so far focused in South Greenland. And so I look here at the integrated water vapor transport. This is precipitable water. It's the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere. And around the 8th of July 2023, it's pretty interesting. So here in the water vapor transport, you'll notice the atmospheric river coming on the 6th of July this year and hitting central West Greenland. We're going to look at precipitation measurements from our weather station network. And notice how South Dome is dry. And that stays like this. So the across South Greenland, it's dry during this period around the 8th of July, when, again, this atmospheric river hits central West Greenland and it's delivering rainfall. Here at Dai 2 Station, again, pretty high on the ice sheet. There's 30 millimeters of rainfall in July of this year. At Saddle, even higher, this is like 8,400 feet above sea level, we have more than 10 millimeters of rain. The rain is really coming on the 6th, 7th of July at Dai 2. And Swiss Camp, further north, the rain's coming on the 7th, 8th, 30 millimeters. And that's continued this month. These hourly data are updated to present. There's only a 10-minute latency on these data, so these data are very fresh up through the recording of this video on the 22nd of July. Jar and Swiss Camp. So Jar is 15 kilometers lower on the ice sheet than Swiss Camp, and you'll see similar spike in rainfall, up to 40 millimeters of rain. Looks like about 25 millimeters of rain, an inch of rain in a day at this location at 69.5 north in the Arctic on the Western Greenland ice sheet.
That was glaciologist Jason Box reporting from Greenland. Find links to his regular video updates on YouTube in my show blog at ecoshock.org. As Antonio Guterres said at the start, we are totally out of time. Please listen next week for that new science on the Atlantic currents and when it might collapse, sending the UK and Northern Europe into the cold house, even as the rest of the planet warms. Strange days. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening and caring about our world.
The global sea surface temperature climbed to unprecedented highs for the month of June. According to the Copernicus, driving localized marine heat waves across the planet, including around the UK and Ireland, the Baltic Sea, the Sea of Japan, the Pacific Ocean off New Zealand, and the Western Indian Ocean close to Madagascar. The heat waves are expected to become more frequent, more intense, and last longer as the climate crisis, caused by burning fossil fuels, continues to worsen.